This is Nick Yurick, and you're listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Hordano Diablo.
Let the hate flow!
Available on the Lousy Weather Media Network.
Welcome to Let the Hate Flow Through You, your weekly dose of audible hatred. I'm Jeremy Shear.
El Hordano Diablo.
And this week, somebody asked for a doctor, and we got one.
Hello.
Please welcome to the show, Dr. Andy Meredith.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here. This will be one of my last bastions into Cleveland comedy.
Ooh, the last bastion.
Yes,
before so you're just
last foray.
You're just taking your scythe and chopping down the fucking wheat before you...
Well, absolutely.
Well, let's get into it then, Doctor. Why do you hate Cleveland comedy?
I hate Cleveland comedy. First and foremost, let me say that some of these are probably projections of my own failures and shortcomings, so I'm going to try to avoid...
Some of it will definitely be that, but I guarantee you a lot more of it will be founded, in my opinion.
I agree. And it's because, I'm the poster boy for... The failure that is Cleveland comedy, I think. I feel like I don't suck at this. And I perform to nobody. I make $0. And I am not alone in that regard. And part of that happens, I think, because there is no scene. It is dead. If there was a scene, if it ever existed, it has long since died. I'm a punk rocker at heart. I like to compare things to CBGB's OM Fuck. Everyone loves that classic like punk rock, like, oh my God, all those people were getting paid when they performed at OM Fuck. And there's a handful of people, like Mike Polk, people on the radio, all sorts of stuff. Go them. That's so great. They are outliers in a sea of bullshit and failure and hobbyists and losers. And these people are my friends.
Creeps.
Sexual weirdos.
Yeah.
I don't want to name names, but lots of sexual impropriety around like that. And I mean, whatever happened to gag hags, guys? Isn't there like a whole pool of men and women that you can have sex with from the sheer fact that you're performing?
Yes.
Where are they? Where? Because everyone I see getting
Cleveland
up there,
comedy, the unfuckables.
Yeah, exactly, the unfuckables. This is a golden opportunity for you to get up there and get laid, and you make the saddest dick jokes that I've ever heard. Like, and you have to speak about your life while you're a loser in your life, and. Something that is especially unique to Cleveland comedy, and it transcends all art forms, is the shows to nobody.
Yeah.
That is uniquely Cleveland. Do you guys know what I'm talking about when I say a show to nobody?
Let's describe it just for...
Just comedians?
For the people listening at home, a show to nobody is where no audience shows up.
Yeah.
We have a very unique art form that... I like to use metaphors of cars because I kind of understand cars. So, like, the audience is the key that starts the engine, that gets it going. And I have been lambasted publicly on Facebook for leaving a show where we had no audience. And that was supposed to be, like, my last book show in Cleveland, my last hurrah. We had headliners from out of town. And it may have been... the doldrums of their career as well to show up. Cause like they came in from out of town to nobody and nothing
there.
And that's like being a Browns fan still. Like you're doing a show to nobody. You're languishing in your failure.
It's just, I mean, a show to nobody is basically a show to comedians who I've said this for years. I've said this on this show a million times. It's basically a show to comedians who don't want to laugh at your jokes, even if they're funny.
Because they've heard them a million times.
Either they've heard them or they're just like, oh, that was, you know, every fucking comedian. I don't care who you are. Every fucking comedian's insecure in one way or another.
You have to be because you have to be. So here's the big reason why I'm quitting. I took LSD. And I went to the Funny Stop. If that's not enough to just start you down the path of never wanting to do this again, that's fine. I realized I wanted to quit because of the insecurity and the egomania, the absolute egomania that it takes to try to make the cut in this. It's a business, too. Mm-hmm. Like,
not around here, but it should be.
But we need to treat it like a business. Mm-hmm. And maybe there are people that they just are able to compartmentalize better than I can. And they're like, oh, I'm going to write my dick jokes now. And then I'm going to go and live my life like a normal fucking person. And I can't do that.
There are definitely people in this community who, or did. I don't know. I don't hear the names as much as I used to.
Sure.
But there are definitely people who do treat it like a business. But they treat it as if, okay, there's nine of us, and that's who we're going to get on shows, and that's who we're going to help make money and not expose anybody else.
Like, and that's a product of the so-called scene.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, really, the best we can do is that there's like five people worth paying.
Yeah.
Out of the dozens and dozens of people that do.
Probably close to 100 at this point. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Or at least at one point.
Yeah, and you got people, it's classic Cleveland brain drain. Anyone that's worth anything gets the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And comedy specifically, you know, it is kind of a New York, L.A. driven.
Yeah, 100%. Place. Chicago.
Yeah, and I have performed in those places, and I've seen it, and it's a different scene because I feel like people are working towards something.
Yeah.
You can go and do comedy every night of the week here in Cleveland. I don't hear anyone with a voice. I don't hear anything new and interesting. And I feel like people are afraid to talk about whatever. And you don't have to drop an N-bomb.
Funny shit.
And yeah.
We just talked about that recently, is people are afraid to talk about funny stuff.
The number one rule of comedy that I always thought was that you needed to be funny.
Yeah, it's fair.
I don't know what the collective goal of Cleveland comedy is, but it's not.
Sheer, why don't you take that one as being the most seasoned?
Yeah.
What's everybody that's like you said, there's no scene. So the definition of a scene depends on who you are, I guess. Like your definition seems to be there is a group of professionals that are all
so-called
so-called professionals
that are all making money, and that's just not the case.
No,
I mean if there is, it's not that very many people. And there are a lot of people on the outside looking in trying to get to be one of those people. Everybody gets into comedy for different reasons. Some people want to get really good at stand-up. Like, that's their end game.
Right.
Like, they just want to get good at stand-up. Some people want to make a living at doing stand-up, which is, some people would say that's different. And some people wouldn't. There's an argument to be made that not having to worry about, like, performing strictly for money gives you more artistic freedom because you don't have to worry about, I can't say this because then I won't be able to get booked here, or I can't do this because it'll look bad on this show that's more money. I can't do this interesting show because I'm going to do this corporate gig that's like five times more money on this night, even though, you know, I might connect with a different audience that night.
Do you think Dave Chappelle self-censors like that? Do you think Bill Burr self-censors like that? I don't like.
Or
to
the
bring
two examples? No, those are the exact two examples I gave when we were talking about this. Like, I don't know, remember the exact episode, but I mean, those are the two guys I always use as an example. Like, they still will push boundaries,
yeah. And
they're not afraid to. No. I mean, granted, both of them have their livings made. Like, for the foreseeable future, but at the same time, they're not afraid. They're like, I mean, Bill Burr said it the best. He said, I don't need everybody to like me. And, like, that was brilliant when I heard that.
Absolutely.
Like, that guy's a fucking artist.
And whatever your end goal for getting into comedy is, I thought that the coda, that everything that everyone has to return to is that you are trying to be funny. You are trying to be funny. And that comes in all different kinds of flavors, but I feel like that is not the overreaching goal, because if you become, to reference Bill Burr, if you become undeniable, which has always been my goal, that I'm just a funny motherfucker. And a lot of people could argue that I'm not. Fuck them, they're pussies.
different strokes, different
suck
folks.
My fucking dick, world. But, like, it shouldn't be to get more Instagram followers. And if your end goal is not to necessarily make it rich doing comedy, don't you want to attain a level where people are paying you for the thing that you do?
I like you said you always liken shit to cars. I always liken shit to professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Like somebody said to Dusty, I forget who said it to him, but Dusty Rhodes asked somebody, he was like, well, don't you want to be the champion? The guy was like, no. He's like, well, then what the hell are you doing here in the first place? Like,
exactly.
If you don't want to be the best, then what the fuck are you doing here?
Exactly. I want to be the funniest motherfucker in the room. And I've had varying successes with that, I feel. And if the goal is not to be the funniest motherfucker in the room, how are you going to deal with the overreaching failure that is the attempt at doing stand-up comedy? And especially, how do you handle, if you don't think that you're just the fun, yeah, you know, I am the funniest, I want to become funnier, whatever route you're trying to go, there's probably a different route to doing it than stand-up. I feel like that bubble is going to burst soon, where, you know, or it's going to turn into spoken word shit. Like, why do we have YouTubers at the Improv? And the short answer is that it puts asses in seats.
Yeah, I mean, if it sells, you know.
But is that comedy?
Not necessarily, no.
Right.
I mean, it's not stand-up.
It's not stand-up. It's like,
I mean,
spoken word. It might as well be like a when people go on a book tour.
Yeah, but I mean, that's been an option for years.
I mean, every art form deserves a stage, but I mean, better fucking thrive on it, you know?
Exactly right.
But the whole, like, that's not stand-up thing, like, that debate's been going on for fucking forever, and, you know, it created the whole alt versus club thing, and, you know, now the whole, you know, YouTuber versus, you know, stand-up thing. And it doesn't fucking matter. Like, what matters is, will people come to pay? Will people pay to see you? And will you? I think what a lot of, you know, this. So let's liken it to wrestling.
Okay. I'm going to stay in your guys' wheelhouse.
Speaking my language.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got to know our fan base. You got to relate to people.
All right. Let's say Cleveland is a wrestling territory. There's only room for one champion.
Right.
But there's got to be a show.
Right.
So, you know, who do you put on the underneath? And, you know, well,
the mid-carders.
Yeah. Well, it's not. There's also people that have to be constantly striving for the belt.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's got to be people on the underneath, and there's got to be opening match people. And, like, the.
And we call them opening mic people.
Yeah.
But the thing. But, you know, with what Cleveland has with its own wrestling promotion around here, at least this is what it appears from me being on the outside, is that the promotion itself sells the tickets. Like, people come to see AIW.
Yeah.
People aren't coming to see the specific people on the show unless they're bringing in somebody,
yeah,
you know, like a Raven or
Nash
or a Nash or a D'Lo Brown. So everybody's goal when they start a show is to, like, hey, we're doing comedy and that sells the tickets, rather than, hey, the champ is here and that sells the tickets. And I think sometimes it takes people a little bit to figure out that just like another comedy show popping up, you know, isn't enough to sell tickets.
No. No, and locations suck around here, and a free bar tab is not enough to sustain a show. And even when you have a unique idea, I did a show where we were making fun of movies live.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the last one we did was Howard the Duck.
Okay.
And I took LSD before I went to that show because I knew no one was going to be there. And no one was there. And I
I have a now that you say that, I have a situation very similar.
This is
to
what
that.
I'm saying. So at intermission, I'm like, okay, well, we're gonna like pack it up and we'll go home and have a nice trip and not think about any of these things. Something about LSD and Cleveland comedy doesn't mix well. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
It just makes you depressed.
I've had decent experiences on LSD doing comedy, but that was in every time I tripped on stage, it was in Kent.
Yeah,
at the Gyro or the Stone Tavern. With a bunch of people I liked.
There you go. That's the answer. I have to go to Kent and take LSD to have an enjoyable time in Cleveland comedy.
Well, it's like when I ran the open mic and it started going downhill. I remember like nobody like I would plaster everything all over Facebook. Jess was making fucking video ads, but people towards the end weren't coming, and I was fucking, I had just broken my arm like in a bad car crash, so I was just constantly lubed up on fucking painkillers and booze. And I just remember like on the show days I'd be like, okay, well I won't get fucked up until like, or start getting fucked up like halfway through the show. I'd show up, no comics would fucking show up to sign up for like an hour, so I'd just be like, all right, handful of pills, give me a beer, and just, and then people show up and I'd be fucked up on stage.
And that's par for the course.
Yeah, 100%.
And you have people that, I lived on the east side in Willoughby, and there was a couple of things, various times people tried to get started going there. We couldn't even get comics to come out, let alone asses in seats. There's a huge promotion problem in Cleveland that I feel like no one has the answer to. Like, we lose to the Browns losing. Like, we lose to game 135 of the Indians losing. And we can't get people to come out. And we're trying to have these small victories on, like, a Wednesday night when you figure no one else will have going on. And no one's coming to these shows.
Yeah.
We can't even get other comedians who we book and ostensibly are going to pay to drive 20 minutes to the east side.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do on the road when you need to go to Kentucky for $50?
Yeah.
That is a thing that seems to be happening the more people I talk to. It's people want to do shit in their backyard.
Why? No one wants to come to your backyard. Grandma doesn't want to hear you talk about your dick. Your girlfriend's heard everything. Your cousins have been to 50 shows.
All of them have seen your dick.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea should be to get out as many places as you can, because how do you know if your jokes work if you're not getting them in front of as many people as you possibly can?
You got to take the message out to the people, man, because we have to compete with Facebook. We have to compete with 70-inch TVs. We have to compete with the entirety of internet pornography. We have to compete with kids' bullshit schedules with their kids' stuff and girlfriend obligations.
Work.
No one wants to come to your shitty bar show on a Wednesday. Yeah. So we need to make a thing happen. And I'm as much as fault of that as everyone else who's ever failed at this, is that Friday and Saturday nights are when people go out. Where are the Friday and Saturday night shows that are at the Improv?
Or Hilarities.
Yeah, or Hilarities. Or the goddamn Funny Stop where you can't even swear.
Yeah.
Because we're protecting the delicate sensibilities of fucking tweakers in Cuyahoga Falls.
I couldn't agree with that statement more.
Don't say fuck in front of the meth heads. They'll want a refund. Like, get out of here.
It's Pete's just old school, when it's like, yeah, your openers can't swear, because otherwise if the headliner has as fuck as a punchline, it won't work if you have a...
It's 2019, fucking graduate, dude.
Well, it's also a product of the loser openers who come up, who he tries to give a shot, and you get up there and you're like, hey, so I was fucking an AIDS baby the other day, and I felt like after I came, I was addicted to crack. And like, oh, who are you trying to relate to? Who is your audience for that joke? And if you're going just for the sake of being offensive, you didn't hit the mark there either, because it's not offensive enough.
I could just.
Well, I mean, the Pete has been giving more.
The Pete.
The Pete.
El Pitano.
L. Pete. he has been giving more independent promoters opportunities to put on shows at the Funny Stop, but they're not, you know, he's not going to do Friday and Saturday nights because he's already got, like, his shows booked.
Right. So, and that's fine. I don't care about the Funny Stop then. That's the whole point. You're telling me in all of Cleveland, there's no venues.
And you can't get people to come out to
it. Well, I mean.
And you can't sell tickets. And why can't people get on the radio? We have stand-up comedians that are on the radio every single day. We have the morning show in Cleveland that has every touring comedian on there. No one ever goes on or has anything to say or has a show to promote ever.
Well, I mean,
even amongst their friends,
there's something different going on there. I don't know. Yeah. I can't speak to it because I don't talk to.
And I'm not trashing it either. It's a question.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, like, we're not exactly. Yeah. Denver has its own fucking comedy radio station.
See, that's what I mean. So there we go. That's a scene.
Yeah. That's something that could really, like, bring people together.
Yeah.
You know?
And talk about, you know, promotion's the name of the game. You even brought up plastering all over the Facebook. Big who fucking cares to your Facebook.
Yeah.
Big who fucking cares. Show me the numbers where that has benefited you. Anybody. Anywhere. That doesn't have a radio show.
Well, no, and like Facebook buries your shit unless you pay to promote it, but then they just send it to fucking countries that, like, sure, 4 18-year-old kids in Malaysia fucking saw that my show's happening in Cleveland. Great.
So if you say a dick joke at the LVT and no one's around to hear it, are you doing art?
Like, or did your wood just fall?
Yeah, or did the wood just fall in the forest and big who cares?
Well, I mean, there are some Friday and Saturday night shows that are doing okay.
Yeah, and more power to them. But are they killing it? Is anyone really making money?
I mean, as far, like, what's your definition of, like, really making money?
Is somebody making a living off of comedy in Cleveland?
Is there literally anyone that's not on the radio right now and who isn't Mike Polk Jr., living legend, not a bad word to say about that guy? Or anyone, like, more success to everybody. Like, and that's what I mean. Like, where...
Are there people that are making a living doing strictly comedy in Cleveland? No, and nor should there be.
Why can't they make money, though? Why can't... And let's not say that you're making your rent money off of your Friday night show.
Something.
Okay? But, like, no one is making money. I did Lyft to pay for my album recording. And everyone's, like, in the same boat. They're picking up extra shifts at the Ford plant and what the fuck ever. It's just cuckoo bananas. And then you go record an album at a bar in front of nobody.
Like, well, I mean, that's changing. It seems like more people are trying to record stuff. But this happens, like, you know, I've been around for a minute. There's cycles. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
This is the album recording cycle again.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know.
I mean, I put out Paw's record, what, like a year and a half ago?
Who?
Chris Paw.
Who?
I hope he kicks you in the balls for that.
Yeah, he won't.
He'll probably ask you to kick him in the balls.
Right?
Hey, fella.
Hey there, big guy.
I love Paw.
No, but...
I'm glad that I'm Eskimo brothers with Paw now.
Yeah, good for you, buddy.
Yeah.
Right. Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
not naming that name.
Let's not do that.
You're not going to get sued today. Can you get sued by a broke person? How does that work?
I mean, it depends. Are they banging the lawyer? Because it could happen. At any rate, no, but I mean, like, there are a couple of people, like, recording albums at Hilarities now. Flint, who we had on the show, and
fuck
John
yes.
Armstrong, who
yes.
I kind of also want to have on the show. They're doing a 30-minute album each at Pickwick, and it's on a, if I'm not mistaken, it's on a weekend night, which Sunday night counts as a weekend.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm speaking off the top of my head here. I didn't look it up, but it looks like
Flint can draw money from me.
Okay, he's got one guy.
I mean, I think if he was, you know, like out like he was, I don't know, maybe he is, but like out like he was like 4 or 5 years ago, yeah. You know, like he's a funny motherfucker.
Exactly. And there's lots of funny motherfuckers here. And I feel like they're talking to brick walls. I feel like that we can't engage Cleveland. We can't get it going. There's not. Like a scene.
Like you said, it's cyclical.
Yeah.
It's cyclical, and, you know, there are enough, like...
And Flint and Armstrong, we're going to lose them. We're going to lose them to New York and L.A. Or we should. We should.
I mean, not everybody's going to move.
Yeah.
You know, Mike's not moving. I'm not moving. I tried. I can't. I'm too crazy, so I'm sticking around.
Yeah.
But
to make everyone, all the listeners at home feel better, I'm moving. I am going to be in Denver by the spring at the latest.
Yeah. So we traded.
Absolutely.
You're going to get an active captain, Andy Meredith, instead of, you know, a weirded out Jeremy Shear who can't leave his basement because the pills are making him too tired to do anything.
That was my favorite Jeremy Shear.
The sedated Jeremy Shear.
The sedated, the great roomy Jeremy Shear.
The hibernating Jeremy Shear.
Yeah, a little backstory here. I lived with Andy for a few months, and he caught me on the tail end of coming off all the meds.
That's right. And I was the only person in Cleveland comedy that offered Shear any help. Thank you, world. Like, what one of our godfathers is coming back. And he was going to be homeless. And I just finished moving out of Dead Wife House today where she was in. That was apparently a recurring joke around the Cleveland comedy scene that I, like, just murdered my wife. I got a pretty thick skin. I even have, like, a whole 10-minute bit about how, like, she's dead. And how she's in hell. So, like... But where's the funny? It's just like, well, you killed your wife. Like, that's evident to everybody. It's like, where's the joke?
Yeah, where's the punchline?
Where's the joke? And I mean, joke is that we think we have something going. That's the real joke in Cleveland comedy.
I wouldn't. Like, I mean, I do. Do we?
When was the last time you saw a pro do a show? Like a real, like, touring, you know. Maybe not Bill Burr level.
I was going to say probably Burr.
Okay. So when you left that, you could probably barely fucking breathe.
Yeah.
You're laughing so hard.
It's great. He did 20 minutes just recording on his iPhone riffing.
Yeah.
That's how we started his show.
We don't have that in Cleveland.
No.
We don't have people that can do a half hour that just destroys you. Maybe they exist. I don't see it. Another thing that people do that, like, oh, hey, I'm not selling out the improv. I'm not going to do my A material today. Someone might buy your shit still.
Yeah.
Or they paid to be tonight.
That goes up to the egomania that you brought up at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not going to do, the stuff that I know works in front of two people that I'm not getting paid for. Like,
that's an open mic. That's its own failure, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I have heard it at, like, bar shows that don't really sell that well. You're still being paid tonight.
Yeah.
You should be doing your A game.
I mean, if you're getting paid, you should be, like, working like you are getting paid.
Thank you.
And the people that, you know, because I've run a lot of, like, shows to nobody.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very, very guilty of that because when I was first starting out, you know, my big thing was, like, I got to get stage time mm-hmm. so I can...
It all,
you
know, counts, right?
Yeah,
it doesn't really count.
Well...
Some of it's garbage time.
Yeah, but
like with running, it's called garbage miles. You should have had a rest day today. But instead you went out and you jogged and you didn't actually get anything done.
I need the trash.
Oh yeah.
Because part of how I write is being on stage with the microphone in my hand and comic brain working.
Yeah.
Like that's how like the jokes form and is very painful to watch. But I try to only do that at mics. But, you know, if I'm going to do, like, a show in front of fucking, like, not a bunch of people, but like people that have seen me before, that's a time to work out, but it's not going to be like, I'm bringing up not anymore. It was in the beginning of my career. Like I'm coming up there with just a premise.
Yeah. And we can't even work out properly because no one's paying fucking attention.
I mean, yeah, I was in, you know, the shows that I did at the Bop Stop. Yeah. Was it the Bop Stop? Is that what it was called?
Sure, why not? On, place that closed down because fuck it, nobody
the
came.
Jazz Club, right?
Yeah. Okay. It's still there. Yeah, yeah. It's still there. I mean, they do a monthly girl show that sells out. So.
That's rad.
Good for them.
Can I
say something for a minute?
Go ahead.
I support like women's comedy shows. Could you imagine if I did like a men's only review or a whites only
Dude,
comedy
this is,
show?
This is Cleveland. This is liberal. You can't do that shit.
No, absolutely not. And it's fine because I feel like that women by and large are marginalized in the comedy community and they should form their own shows.
Remember when we were talking about creeps and just, sexual perverts?
Yeah.
I could probably count on all my hands and fucking my fingers and toes, like how many girls I know that have like been like, oh, that guy's a fucking weirdo, or you know, he did this to me, you know, like fuck pieces of shit.
Dude. Absolutely. Everyone's pieces of shit.
Like I might be an alcoholic, but at least I'm not a fucking creep.
Absolutely. Yeah. The only person you get handsy with is yourself and Shear.
Yeah. I have stories to tell you about that.
We've had a few long trips to Michigan.
Well, yeah. on my 25th birthday, Shear stripped down to his underwear and shoved my face in his crotch. And he opened for me. He's like, happy birthday, Andy. Here's my weird dick and balls. Hey. And then it's my turn. I just go next. It's just, I'm like, okay. Like, my
and you used to call me
there.
The G.G. Allen of Cleveland comedy? You sick fuck.
You look more like G.G. Allen.
More like him, but you act more like him.
And I was really drunk, and there was a girl that was very interested in that act.
Well,
so.
You guys are both halfway there and that you haven't delivered the goods on stage yet. You just need to die of an OD and you will have fulfilled the prophecy. And that's the other thing too. Like Cleveland in particular is a drinking town. It's such an abusive alcoholic town that AA actually started here. I don't think a lot of people know that.
And we're like one of the leading fucking states, whatever, in the opiate fucking crisis.
Yeah.
Like Ohio's right up there, man.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of it you see.
Who's drinking?
And I quit drinking. Shear quit drinking. I'm not for people drinking, but I don't know anyone who does better after they've had four beers before they go up.
I used to be like that.
You think you are. But
no, but I definitely was better. Maybe. Not when I was fucked up, but like if I was loosened up, I was definitely a lot better.
Oh yeah. But everyone loses sight of where loosened up is.
Oh yeah, no, I did that many times too. There's video footage of that. I told the same joke. I was hosting a show and I told the same joke three times in between each comedian.
Oh man. Yeah. That's brilliant.
Right? And, like, dude, the third time it finally clicked with me, I was like, I think I told this once already. Absolutely. That was the third time.
Yeah.
And we even have people, we have creative show ideas. We have roast battles.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, other people are doing roast battles. Point being, it's not all just, like, you know, three white dudes with a beard. With beards. With a beard. They share it.
No, there are.
Or it could be other people of other ethnicities that, like, their little group of, you know, white people and other minorities.
Yeah.
Which I'm all about being all inclusive. Don't get me wrong there. But then when you exclude the rest of the community, you're a cunt.
You're a cunt. And are you including people because they're funny and they're black? Or are you including them because they're black? Or are you including them because they're funny and they're a woman? Or because they're a woman? Like, do you laugh at the shit that you see?
Yeah.
I do not.
No, I'm just saying, like, I get exactly what you're saying.
And I don't expect the LVT to be like the improv on a Saturday night where I'm just, like, dying. But, like, let's participate in the things that we do. Let's act like we give a shit about what's going on instead of waiting for our turn to go suck dick for 5 minutes.
I mean, that's not a... That's not a Cleveland problem, though. I will say that. That's just like, that's comedy. Like, that's doing open mics.
I think the real answer is that I don't hate Cleveland comedy. I apparently just hate comedy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, a lot of these things aren't, you know, necessarily like Cleveland-centric problems. I think if you hop from city to city, you will see that only like maybe five people draw. And then you'll, you know, get like new shows popping up every now and again that'll burn themselves out in a couple months for whatever reason. Or, you know, people will start up a show that, you know, just by people showing up will, you know, keep running for a while, even though it makes no money. You know, it's, I think
we lost money tonight because we gave the comedians a free bar tab.
I have, actually the first night I lost money on a bar tab is when I booked Chad Zumok to feature.
was that the infamous night where he crashed his car into a blender at a Kohl's?
No, it was, it was not.
Am
that
I mixing
night.
My stories?
You're just a touch. No, this is actually like the first show I think he got booked for when he moved back like a long time ago. But, the owner of the bar, like I went to go see him the day after the show. Cause I was like, this was like me trying to, cause when I first started, like I booked like a bunch of shows a week and they all paid and I paid everybody because there was money to be made and I found it. And like I shared it around and I had people coming out. It did not last for as long as I would have liked, but smoking ban pretty much like completely killed me.
That's insane.
Well, everybody like, that came out, like, wanted to sit there and smoke during the show. And then, like, you know, they had to get used to going outside to smoke. So it was just like, no, fuck this. Like, I'm just going to drink it home. And then it took a little bit to, like, settle with people. Like, all right, like, now we have a new rhythm.
Going out in Cleveland sucks so badly. People would rather get drunk in their shithole houses.
I can confirm that.
Absolutely. I can get a bottle of Black Label for what I spent at the fucking LVT last night.
Jesus Christ.
I like how you think there's a bottle of Black Label. Like it's just like a 40 ounce of Black Label.
Fuck yeah. I mean, isn't it like they measure it in milliliters?
Yeah, they
it's the
do.
Equivalent they of do. Like a 40.
Yeah, I mean, how much is a, how many liters?
Rich folk have to brown bag it.
They're smart too.
Fuck yeah.
There are some cabaret shows popping up again.
Is Liza Minnelli there? Because if not, I don't give a fuck.
No, I'm talking about like the urban definition of cabaret where you bring your own booze.
Oh, okay.
That's awful.
It's,
Dude, I know what I'm like. And like, I know like the like, I'd say the worst episode we've ever done in this show. So if there's any new listeners, go back and try and catch this one. It's one of our live ones and it was from Ingenuity Fest.
Ooh.
And I'm not paying for fucking booze.
Inebriation Fest.
I'm not doing that. I'm going to bring my own because we're bringing a bunch of shit so I can smuggle my own beer in. Great. Well, I drank like probably three Victory Golden Monkeys before I got there and probably four when we got there before we ever went out on stage.
Oh, yeah.
And I was a fucking mess.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Jordan was a mess. I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off because I got asked to produce like four segments and none of them were being like. Run.
No, nothing was cooperating that night, even human beings.
Yeah. It was.
So you're saying you depended upon other people to do their part and they didn't? In Cleveland?
Me. Specifically, is who I was talking about. And the fucking guy who was running the soundboard who wouldn't let us plug in a fucking computer like an
you?
Asshole. No. That was me yelling at the sound guy, which is probably why we sounded even worse.
When I recorded my album, my sound guy ran up like an $80 bar tab on my tab. And I don't drink. That was especially interesting for me. I'm like, does this how much?
Did you say help yourself? Or?
No. I got him a bucket of beers and that was it. I'm like, oh yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Wait a minute, an $80 bar tab and I remember what you paid him.
Mm-hmm.
Look.
Yeah.
You got robbed.
Yeah, I got fucking fleeced, and I did Lyft for the fucking
money to
opportunity
do it.
To do it. Like, oh, cool. Dude, I was doing rides. I dropped someone off, like, around the block from where I was supposed to be recording an album in 15 minutes. Oh, and since we already name dropped him, Chris Paul showed up on LSD for his part of the album recording.
Well, I mean...
And
that's so what I mean. Cleveland comedy.
No, and you know what the real Cleveland comedy move is? Is the set sucked. The rock star move is taking LSD and then, like, you do the Jimi Hendrix Monterey Pop of, like, dickhead bar shows.
Andy
but
Meredith.
You didn't.
Andy
you
Meredith sucked. Did not kill his wife, but Chris Paul killed comedy that night.
Absolutely, he did. He was our headliner. And I'm like, hey, man, you already? He's like, I don't know. I'm on... I took LSD before I came.
Dude,
like,
if I had a nickel or a dime for every time, like, I would work the ad-hom door, and Paul knows I love him. He's a good friend of mine. But if I had a fucking penny, nickel, dime, whatever, for every time I heard him say, like, I'd be like, hey, man, how you doing? I don't know.
Yeah. Just fucking... I don't know, man. Waiting for my fucking Thorazine to kick in.
He's not that kind of fella.
No.
No, I can definitely say I've been guilty of doing stuff like that when I've headlined. Somebody in Youngstown, Shane Herman, booked me and Justin Cash on a show together. Justin Cash, for those of you that aren't familiar, won the first Cleveland Comedy Festival contest where you could vote by view count on Time Warner Cable on demand. And Justin's job was sitting in his house and doing dope all day. So he just sat there and watched his special over and over and over again so that he won the pony. And
fuck yeah. That's how you do it, Cleveland.
The
unique
the,
visits my ass.
The but, you know, it helped that, like, people couldn't get too mad about it because if you watched all the specials, like, he got the most laughs. But he did look like a big bug-eyed weirdo. Because Justin looked like a big bug-eyed weirdo. We did a two-man act called the Dirty Brothers, where we were gay lovers that forced somebody to adopt us because we couldn't get married, and we basically
somehow being brothers made it better.
Yeah, Zebekiah and Frank
keeping it
Dirty.
In the family,
and we'd close by. Justin putting his hand up my butt and doing Percocet off my tits. And
on stage?
On stage.
That is impressive.
It was
most impressive.
It was basically like we were like trying to do two-man prop comedy except really, really offensive and dirty, and there's footage of it somewhere.
Are
like,
you proud of me now, Dad?
we brought out
it's like a fucked up Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
It was really we did a contest at the Hermit Club, and since it was a contest, I brought out two tied up little girls as bribes for the judges with an individual bottle of lube because they're kind of dry. And
just an FYI for everyone listening at home.
Yeah. So but that's who, like, they booked out in Youngstown, me and Justin, who were known
for
doing,
that makes
like,
sense. If you're doing that in Youngstown, that's like proper fucking etiquette out there.
There. Well, the thing is, like,
you're,
you know,
hack in Youngstown.
If you're not snorting
that
Percocet off tits on stage, what are you doing?
That was the thing. Like, we were going to do like a little bit of the Dirty Brothers, but the first thing that happened was Shane Herman was like, hey, get whatever you want and tell him to put it on Allegheny Shane. And that was not a good time in my life to be giving me an open tab. Oh, and God. So I drank all the scotch and Justin was with me. So we did
expensive tastes.
They don't sell them in 40 ounces, but I filled up a 40 ounce with Black Label and I had myself a time.
Oh, shit.
White Label was what I was filling
God
up with.
A.
That was
the blends?
Yeah.
You fucking pussy.
I mean, like the really shitty video of me online from the Cleveland Comedy Festival where I'm wearing a kilt, I was drinking like full $16 glasses of blended whiskey that night. So it's just what I drank.
Just like pint glasses.
The last show that I did before I quit for a while, I got sober months after that. I was at a place called Two Bucks in Eastlake.
Oh.
And yeah. someone like heckled me and came up and I did one of those, like, you think it's so easy? You fucking do it. Now, everyone in the know knows that means, like, sign up for a show. This asshole waltzed up to the quote-unquote stage and, like, just stuck his hand out, like, well, I'm fucking ready. And, like, I tell that guy to fucking leave. And I start yelling at another person. Not the person heckling me. I want to make that very clear. And I told that guy that I was going to fuck him in the ass as soon as I was off stage. Like, I was like...
You pulled a Mike Tyson on him?
And I was told this, like, years later. Like, I don't remember any of this. I was the Miles Davis of telling this guy that I was going to fuck him in the ass. I'm like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to fist you and lube it up with a bottle of Tito's.
The Iron Sheik?
Yeah. Well, that guy turned out to be the owner. So that speaks to the failure of Cleveland comedy. Is, you know, we're all just fucked up and we don't know our heads from our asses. We're just yelling our anger in whatever direction.
And drowning whatever substance.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely a lot of drowning in substances happening. But
and just commit to it and stop telling your fucking loser... like half jokes in front of people. Just commit to drinking yourself to death. That's the lesson that I want everyone, I feel, to take away from here. That if you're not fully committed to changing the world through laughter, just drink yourself to death at home.
Well, what?
I can't argue with it.
I mean, yeah, that's one way to look at it. But
that's one way to look at it.
You know, like I said, man, if you look at Cleveland as a territory, you need opening match guys. And
I want them to not suck.
Yeah.
I want our opening match guys to have 5 solid minutes. Can anyone do 5 solid minutes? And here's the thing. You can have talk about one thing for 5 minutes. It's called a bit.
Mm.
You knew a whole bit. I'm like one thing. Like, everyone's stuck in open mic mode.
Just where be they making try make, to jam. Making people laugh every fucking 30 seconds.
If
man.
You go and actually listen to a comedy album, it is a collection of like 5 or 6 minute routines.
Yeah. But you can't, it's really hard to work that 5 minute bit out.
No, not if it's good.
Not when you're Richard Pryor. And that's the first person who comes to mind.
That's Cleveland's answer to every successful comedian ever. Is like, well, you can't do it that way.
Well, I challenge you to go find another city where, you know, you have everybody like, okay, I'm going to do my 5 minutes at this mic on one topic. And then, like, after I have worked out this 5 minutes, like, for the week, like, I'm going to set it aside and move on to another topic. I just don't think that's how people do things.
Well, can't you explore an idea longer than 30 seconds?
When
you're at an open mic? Because it's like, hey, so encyclopedias are useless, right? And they're like, well, that's garbage. I should quit comedy forever. And it's like, you haven't said anything.
No, but that is
you haven't
totally
had
true.
An idea. Like, you didn't... Dude, you didn't express yourself.
When he's talking about, like, undercard guys, that's very, like, you start out, you go in just rifling through, like, bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of, like, but, I'm thinking back to, like, the first time I did sets and shit, and I was just like, oh, it's, you know, a couple lines here, a couple lines here, a couple lines here, a couple lines here, and then it's like, longer form jokes are better anyway.
Yeah.
Way better.
Depends on who's doing them. I mean, I know.
I love storytelling. So, like, that's what really gets me.
In a 5 minute story, like you said, the standard is every 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You can say whatever the fuck you want if they're laughing every 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I have one friend. Shooting low.
Who he has like a 45 minute setup for like this, like for one line. It's not even that great of a line. Like, you took everyone on this long fucking walk, and you got this, like, imagery, but none of it's funny. You're a comedian. You're supposed to be laughing at the thing.
Yeah.
Like, be political. So have something to say other than Trump's orange and you hate him.
Well, I mean...
politics.
I mean, it's I forget who said this, but it's you know, somebody said political comedy is I forget the line. Yep. It happens sometimes.
Political comedy is the nadir of the art form.
No, it was basically it's something for white people.
Absolutely, it's something for white people.
It's just but it's also like it's really challenging to do because you have to keep like you have to keep abreast of everything that's going on, and you can't just run the same like five political minutes into the ground at every
for
like,
4 years while the you know like, yeah, you need to like if you're going to do that in your act, you need to fucking be up to date.
And, yeah,
but the other thing is like there's like so you said it's for
gotta
white
be,
people.
It's got to be good coming out the gate.
Yeah, 100%.
Because like you know how are you going to work it out? Because then it's going to be old news next week.
Mort Saul used to read directly out of the paper, and he was a national treasure. What's your excuse, Cleveland? You're not better than Mort Saul. Is that it? You can't strive.
Here's the excuse for I have for Cleveland. We have like three Jews.
That's it.
Stand up.
You didn't grow up with enough Jews, Cleveland, so you don't well, get
look,
it.
Look, here's the
too
here's,
many whites.
Yeah, there are too many whites. Look, I hate to
look
break
at you, Jordan.
I hate
tells
to break
not white.
I hate to break. No, he's some sort of ethnic.
Oh. Self-hating ethnic.
Untermensch, I believe, is the German word.
No, unter. Yeah, that's the right word. But stand-up comedy was created by Jews and black people to entertain their own people, and then y'all stole it and made it shitty. So,
like the blues.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Fair enough. That's accurate.
So,
you know, started as Jews entertaining their families on holidays, and then moved into black clubs
That's
and
the
records.
Catskills. That's where the Jews go on holiday. The Catskills.
And then white people were like, I want to try this. And now they're trying to make rules for it. It makes me angry.
I see minorities having fun. I can make money off of this and steal the soul out of it.
Said the Jews. Yeah. And the white people are like, take our money.
Well, there had to be more money in it.
Well, somebody had to put the game together. So, I mean.
For a wider audience. But
so I really feel like I held a mirror up to Cleveland today.
Hmm. Yeah, good. And I hope they listen to this. They probably don't because they're full of their own shit.
I see. Well, and that's the other thing, too, is that, like, every asshole is just doing a podcast now.
That's us.
No one has a theme. No, you guys have a theme. You hate things.
Yeah, that's
everyone true. Else is just getting over, and, like, we allow each other to speak. Like, that's an interesting thing. Like, when you have, like, five people, Steve Merz, talking over each other. Not letting each other get a word in edgewise, that's not content.
Yeah.
We want everyone to feel like they're part of the conversation by feeling alienated and not knowing what anyone's actually saying. Podcast!
Everybody does it.
Well, yeah, it takes, like, practice. And
preparation.
And preparation, yes. Preparation, I can't stress enough. But it also... You know, it's one of the, like with stand up, you don't know like how to do it until you do it.
Right.
Like podcasting is kind of the same, except, you know, I don't know how much instant feedback you get if like you're just talking to yourself and thinking, oh, like, you know, people will listen eventually. Let's just keep plugging
away. If Mark Maron can do it, I can do it. Well, but he lived
again,
in L.A.
Jew.
Knew and was a Jew, and he knew people that would come into his shed and talk to him.
Yeah, it's an interview podcast.
I mean,
that's the thing. It's like Mark Maron interviewing people. Like, that's the format. Like,
yeah,
you know. We're going to get more into this very soon.
Yeah.
Keep your ears peeled. But no, man, I mean, you know, people want to branch out and do more things and like get more ears on, you know, you, and podcasting seems like a good way to do it. So I don't fault people for like giving it a run.
And I want them to do it. I want it to be funny. And when it comes to, like, you got to treat stuff like a fucking writing room. Like, you have to have ideas and explore them once you roll tape and get onto shit. Like, I have been a part of, like, 10 failed podcasts.
Circle of Hate.
Circle of Hate. Unnamed podcast that I did with two people named John. And, but, like, it ends up, and I don't hate this, but, like, it'll end up that, like, we're kind of just sitting around high and not getting anything done with a podcast, and we're not recording, and we're not doing anything. We have to do the shit. Show up and do the fucking thing, and the fucking thing is to be fucking funny.
Entertain. Entertain.
It's a bit to entertain people.
Entertain. If you want to be an entertainer, entertain.
Yeah.
If you want to record fucking conversations with your friends and have it on the internet, fuck, cool, do that. But, you know, that might, it's probably not entertaining to anybody else, but fucking you. Is that a podcast,
though?
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's bullshit. The same way that, like, unless you're Mitch Hedberg, doing a bunch of 30-second bits that go nowhere is pointless.
Unless you're Mitch Hedberg.
I've seen some people that have, like, really, really good one-liners.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they're not Mitch Hedberg. And, you know, some of them have albums. And, you know, it's worth seeking out, but it's a difficult thing to pull off.
Because, it is. You know, and how do you do that shit for 45 minutes? That's a lot to remember. That's a lot of material.
Yeah, it is. I've seen.
I can't do the one liner.
I've seen people do it. It's nuts. But you know, you watch people that are kind of structured through one liners. Like they're not necessarily like they're traditional comics, but you know, you see people like will do 10 minutes on a subject.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's all like joke, 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 joke. It's just you do it enough and you remember it, or you have a really good memory where you have notes. Like some people use fucking notes now.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's kind of lame too from someone watching it.
It depends on who's watching it.
Yeah.
Because like I think comics don't like it. Because, like, you know, everybody tells you don't use notes. But the reason that they tell you to not use notes is because there's this conceit that comes with it where people think that you're coming up with this shit off the top of your head.
Absolutely.
And if you're using notes, then, like, that ruins it. It's the same thing as, like, when you hear a wrestler call a spot in the ring.
Yeah.
It just ruins the illusion.
My thing with notes is that one, it does kind of ruin that illusion. I operated under that assumption forever. Like I knew that actors had scripts and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but like when I was young and watching like Comedy Central Presents and stuff like that, I thought these guys were improv-ing. And like, that was what I was shooting for,
right.
Is to be that in the moment and on my toes and that like constantly funny. No one ever told me that you develop your act for 10 years
before you're
and
like
work this shit
good.
Out. And yeah. Doing it my way doesn't work.
Yeah.
I've had some success with it, with capturing the moment with people and that sort of stuff, but that's a tall order.
Yeah, 100%.
And if you can't get that energy going, you're never going to be able to do that. But I ran into where, you know, I would, you know, just pour over my own bits. I'm working on this shit for weeks and months. No one would ever give a shit. But then I'd have people like peeing their pants on whatever I just took a left turn into.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm just going to keep turning left into a fucking circle and I hope that it's funny.
NASCAR.
Yeah. I'm shitty, slow NASCAR of comedy.
Yeah. Did you tape those though?
Yeah, and I tape them, and I go back, and I listen to them, and what it kind of became is that I just, like, I had the bones of what I wanted to talk about. It's almost like modal, like, jazz improv,
yeah.
Where, like, I'm going to play the Stephen King bit tonight, but I don't know exactly what I'm going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to go like, hey, I still get a blowjob even though I wear a clown mask? Or do I just run through how I also look like characters from Whoville but still get pussy? Like, you know, and it's hard, too, going off of, you know, and again, it goes into like maybe people are able to compartmentalize. But like I generally talk about like shit that went on in my life.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
absolutely.
When you get no response, which is, I would rather get booed off stage because at least you were paying attention.
Yeah.
Than just the dead silence
of we don't care.
And it's especially bad when people are going to open mics to try to get ready like for your show on Friday or Saturday. No one gives a shit about what's going on in the room.
Yeah.
Comedians and civilians alike are just waiting their turn.
Well, that's, as I said, that's not a Cleveland problem.
No,
that's
it's an everywhere problem.
Everywhere problem. And, you know, the solution then, which I've said for years, is less mics, more showcases.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, people have to show up to those showcases.
Yep.
And it people, seems like...
Performers need to show up to those showcases.
Yeah. That helps.
Show up to the shit that you're booked on. It's not hard.
Yeah, that definitely helps. Please, if you're booked on something, show up.
No fucking comment there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it happens. You know who did show up today? Dr. Andy Meredith. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I was very glad to be here. I hope everyone walks away hating me and knowing that I'm better and either quits or becomes the way more successful than I'll ever be, and you deserve it.
Jordan, I don't think we're going to find anybody that hates Cleveland comedy as much as Andy Meredith.
No, there is another. I won't apologize again. I'm a rapid offender. You can see right through my skin. I don't care about making mistakes. I keep standing up and falling on my face. Feed me numbing ages. Drag me to the ring. Another discharge paper. Daniels is drunk in me. Frozen my brain and done the punches, and I was meant to take.
This has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.